Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Welcome to Democracy-ish. I'm Danielle Moody.
And I'm Mujahid Ali, who just escaped 1864. And Danielle, I just came here thanks to a DeLorean. And let me tell you, things weren't good then.
You know, it's weird because according to Republicans and the judges in Arizona, it was a great time. So I'm confused, Waj. What did you see in 1864?
Well, slave owners mistook me for a black man and they didn't care, so they were shooting at me. So I had to practice my running skills. I got some good cardio, and then I tried to get some help from folks of color, but they unfortunately were being whipped. And they were toiling and working, and there were very few South Asians. In fact, I don't think there were any South Asians, and the women were all inside the home, so I couldn't get their help. So pretty much, it was just me by myself, and then I found a DeLorean, and I did a Hail Mary prayer, and I came back. I did see some women in the alleyways forcing themselves to abort their babies. Hello? What?
Keep going.
Okay. I did see some women in the alleyways forcing them to abort their babies. Children were working in factories, coughing up. I think they had black lung, totally normal. But other than that, it was pretty fantastic.
You know, it's a wild place to be. We are at a time when apparently judges think that it is completely okay to bring back to life a 160-year-old ban and law on the books in Arizona that outlaws abortion, which is odd because it also outlawed abortion in 1864 during a time when I don't even think Arizona was a state.
Nope.
But what do I know?
Nope.
But women also didn't have the right to vote. Slavery was still in vogue. And right now, Democrats are trying to get this to be overturned. They are not going to be able to. And what has happened is that abortion in the, you know, after Roe decision has become the Achilles heel of the Republican Party. And I'm saying, ride this shit all the way. I'm about it. You want to bring back laws from 1864? You want to do your worst? Show the American people who you are. Take the hood off, take the gloves off, and be your worst person so that there is no confusion between what the difference is between the Republican Party and the Democrats.
Their worst person is their person. Like, that's who they are. And it's one of those situations where, I mean, I think we have to put it in context, is just a few days ago, Donald Trump realizing, oh, wait, we might lose on this abortion, kind of just threw out there, I might leave it up to the states, which is all BS, folks, because he took credit for overturning Roe. He took credit for installing the Supreme Court with three right-wing extremists, right? He ran on it until he realized, oops, my folks have gone too far and they're against IVF in Arizona, in Alabama, and oh my God, we're losing elections. So let me just try to appeal to the moderates. And then he got into a fight with other Republicans. Mike Pence went after him. Lindsey Graham went after him. Then he went after Lindsey Graham. And the day after that, Arizona said, hold my beer and hold my 1860s musket. I've got news for you. We're going to take this DeLorean back to 1864. And even in the case of rape and incest, no abortion. But we might allow it for the safety of the mom, preservation of the mom's health, maybe. And now they're stuck, Danielle. And you did say something to me right before we started recording that I think is, you know, it was worthwhile. You said, I'm not surprised. And can you, and you had a conversation with our dear friend, Dr. Greer.
Yeah.
Can you share that? Why you're not surprised?
Dr. Christina Greer, associate professor at Fordham University. And what she said to me, whenever I say anything about what Republicans are doing, she goes, my grandmother once said, you should only be surprised when you're surprised. And we need to stop being stuck in this place of shock that Republicans are going to continue to do their worst until they are stopped. And the only way that they are going to be stopped is in the November election. That's it. It's not the courts. It's not Donald Trump, miraculously deciding that he's unfit. It's not the Republican Party turning on him. It is going to be the voters, period. And with that, let us bring in our guest for today.
And we shouldn't be surprised. And this, I was going to do a beautiful segue. This is why they pay me the big money. Check this out, Clay. Just give me a second. And we shouldn't be surprised if, in furtherance of white supremacy and these toxic regressive laws, people of color, our folks, come out as ambassadors, tokens, and enforcers. Mm-mm. It's the age-old gig, or as Clay Kane, our guest, says, the grift, with his New York Times best-selling book, The Grift, The Downward Spiral of Black Republicans from the Party of Lincoln to the Cult of Trump. Sorry, I had to do that, Clay, just to give you a...
Oh, I appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
So Clay, you heard us, you walked into the room in the midst of us talking about this 1864 law that is now going to be the law of the land in Arizona in about 2 weeks. Before we get into your book, The Grift, if you have any thoughts on where Republicans are headed right now in terms of this newly resurrected legislation, let us know.
Republicans are headed in the direction that Southern Democrats were headed in 1864. Mm. In 1864, this country wouldn't have survived a Democratic administration. Literally, we would not have survived. All three of us here would not have survived a Democratic administration in 1864. In 2024, I do not believe this country will survive a Republican administration. They are neo-Confederates. They're literally going back to an era where the Confederacy wanted the reign supreme. So much of it is disturbingly identical to some of the things I wrote about in the book. In the beginning of the book, I start right after the Civil War. So listen, that train is never late. The blueprint is already there. They are literally following what many folks did before them. It is disturbing. And I was saying this earlier today, that when they're going to policies from 1864, mm-hmm. if you think you aren't impacted by it, don't worry, you are next. Mm-hmm. We're next. We had several civil rights acts that were overturned in the 1860s, and they're trying to do the same thing. So it's not shocking, as you said. I love Dr. Greer, and this is where we are. But the glimmer of hope is the voting electorate was different back then. Black folks couldn't vote. Women couldn't vote. There weren't the amount of immigrants we have in the country today. A lot of poor white folks couldn't vote. So we have more power then. I hope we can just utilize that power now.
Go ahead, Wash. I have to say this because I was mentioning this to someone else recently. I said, what's different now is that we're here. And what's different now is that, children of immigrants like I am, we're not just attorneys. Some of us are partners. And some of us have our own podcasts. And some of us publish books. And now we're elected officials. No one's going back to the bus. No one's going back into the kitchen. No one's going back in the closet. And that's something that white supremacy is having a huge problem with, Danielle, is that they have to contend with us.
I mean, but the fact is that they don't want to contend with us. They want to erase us. And that is, where we find ourselves. And I think, Clay, I want to give you the opportunity to kind of lay out the premise of your book to our listeners, because I think that we oftentimes, or maybe I'll just speak for myself, try to ignore, laugh at, look away from Black Republicans. And what I will say is this, as a Black queer woman, as a child of immigrants, anytime that I have met a Black Republican, they have tried to shame me for aligning myself with what they have referred to as, quote, the Democratic plantation, which you name and lift up in the introduction to your book. So I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the insidious nature and grift of Black Republicans that is very different than Republicans at large. Because I do believe that what you have laid out is the danger, right? The danger that it isn't just the buffoonery. It isn't just, you know, the negation of Blackness. It isn't something to look away from, because what we have seen in the last few presidential cycles is this clawing away of Black men, right, from the Democratic Party and kind of ushering them into the Republican Party. So give us the 50,000 foot view and the window of why Black Republicans needed to be the center focus of your book, The Grift.
Well, what I wanted to do is I wanted to expose frauds and honor heroes. And one of the things that I've said promoting this book, I've said, how did Black Republicans go from Frederick Douglass to Clarence Thomas? How did Black Republicans go from Jackie Robinson, who was a powerful person in politics after he leaves baseball, to Herschel Walker? How did we get here? And what I document is that it is a downward spiral. It is a long time in the making. And it's not only a downward spiral of Black Republicans, but a downward spiral of racial politics in the GOP. And, you know, they often say Democratic plantation, but they often go back to, well, we used to be Republicans. We were Republicans. And if this were the 1860s, all of us would be Republican, obviously, right? So being that we had this erasure and this attack on our history, I wanted to show what the original Black Republicans were. They believed in race-conscious policies. They believed in race-specific policies. They believed in an economy that would uplift Black communities. They believed in public education. They believed in actually telling our history. Frederick Douglass, Ida B. Wells, they are rolling in their graves at what we have today. And the reason why it's important that we don't ignore it is because the current crop of Black Republicans, they play a certain role. They provide racial cover for racism in the GOP. So if Senator Tim Scott says, there's no reason for a Voting Rights Act, there isn't racism at the voting booth, well, it must be okay because a Black guy is saying it. When you have Herschel Walker getting a higher percentage of the white evangelical vote when he ran for senator in Georgia than Ted Budd did in North Carolina, that's disturbing. So one of the key things that a lot of us made a mistake was ignoring Clarence Thomas. I have this in the book. He really is the watershed moment in the grift. Before him, there were some Black Republicans who, policy-wise, I wasn't really with them, but it wasn't this shaming, this debasing of Black people. Clarence Thomas was the remix. He's somebody who was against affirmative action, but admits affirmative action saved his life. He is somebody who shames his own sister and more or less doesn't use the exact word, but characterizes her as a welfare queen, his own flesh and blood. And he is elevated for this. He is the first Supreme Court justice that did not get a unanimous rating from the American Bar Association. But he knew the role. He was to be the anti-Clarence Thomas. And the blueprint that he laid out, you see so many other folks following it. So I go through the whole process, and then some folks were in the GOP, then they leave. They're kicked out. You know, they have their come to Jesus moment. Colin Powell was famously booed at the 2000 RNC convention when he mentions affirmative action. I have a robust interview with Michael Steele in the book. But now what we have, truly dangerous. The GOP is not going to make a Herschel Walker mistake. Now you have Mark Robinson in North Carolina. You know, they're not going to make a Larry Elder mistake. A Daniel Cameron in Kentucky is not done yet. the role they play, it is to actively dismantle civil rights. And this book, in many ways, goes beyond the R and the D and goes beyond black or white. Because look at Nikki Haley. She's not, at one point, she says she was white. She's not a black woman. But you see the role that she is playing. It's the lengths that people will go for proximity and access to power. And part of that agreement, part of that blood oath, is you will shame and you will hurt your own community. And in the book, I focus on people who have significant power, not some of the clowns on social media, people who are gunning for actual power. It is dangerous. You know, you think of Handmaid's Tale. The famous character in it is Serena Waterford. She was a woman who was fighting against women being able to have equal rights, and she was elevated for that. It's the same kind of a potion. So that was my reason for writing it. I wanted to expose these frauds and to not ignore it. Rosa Parks said, watch out for Clarence Thomas. And other people, like someone I love and adore, like Maya Angelou, she supported Clarence Thomas because they didn't think he'd be that bad. They thought when he would get in there, he would do the right thing. So now it's on steroids. It is scary, and it's important to call these people out. And lastly, I'll say, I think about Ida B. Wells. She said, the way to right wrongs is to shine the light of truth upon them. Mm-hmm. I consider this book shining my light of truth.
Mm-hmm. From The New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham, a keenly observed novel of a young black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about David's 18 months working for the senator's presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets a myriad of people who raise a set of questions. Questions of history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his own life anew and come to terms with his identity as a young black man and father in America. Inspired by the author's experiences working on Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, Cunningham uses a political campaign as his narrative backbone. Great Expectations will be one of the talked-about novels of the year, Colm McCann. Great Expectations is available wherever books are sold.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
No, we really appreciate it. And I'm glad you mentioned Nikki Haley because I see so many similarities. And if you're a person of color and know anything about American history, the greatest grift cultural validator is a black man or a black woman, because then they can invalidate the lived experiences and pain and frustration of all people of color. And then they end up validating white supremacy. They become enforcers of white supremacy. But as you've mentioned in the past few years, the folks who have really emerged within the GOP are South Asians. Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Kash Patel, right? Model minorities, right? The ones who get to attack both South Asians, immigrants of color, and black people. And they're the ones who come in and say, look, 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 there's a place for me in the Republican Party. What racism? No racism, right? And it's so dangerous. And you mentioned the word grift, and I want to get back to that, because based upon your research, how much of this, Clay, is a calculated, cynical ploy for, like you said, access to power, and how much is it, well, they ain't talking about me, right? I'm the good one. You know, I'm the special one, because I've heard both about Clarence. Clarence thinks, oh, I'm the good one. I'm the special one. It's the liberals who betrayed me. And then at the same time, well, I'll take this yacht trip. And I'll get this new nice little property deal. And I say this with the emergence, and I don't want you to get into hot water if you don't want to talk about it, but I'm telling folks I have a good radar about this. I told people to be wary about Candace Owens. I said she's going to blow up. They didn't pay attention to her. Look at her now. And there's a new guy, Coleman Hughes, who came out with a book called The End of Race Politics, Arguments for a Colorblind America. And I don't know if you've been following him, Daniel, but this guy is all over the place, says he's not a conservative, but guess who loves him? Right-wing and conservatives. So unpack that for us.
Yeah, so when you think of a grift, it's not brainless. There is an exchange, right? It is tactical. There is a strategy behind it. And, you know, what am I going to get in return? It has no morals. It has no ethics. It is an exchange, a hope that I will be elevated, right? Now, in the 19th century, believe it or not, I cover this in the book, there were some key people after Reconstruction, a guy named Isaiah Montgomery in Mississippi in 1890, who votes against Black men being able to vote. And he was elevated in the media at the time. They said he was a credit to his race. Booker T. Washington. You know, we love Booker T., but when I dive into some of the things that people don't know about him, that in many ways he said we should accept being second-class citizens and bow down to white rule. So the grift is an exchange of proximity to power, right? Now, some people aren't as smart. Some people, they go on the apology tour, like Stacey Dash or Omarosa, or some people like J.C. Watts will have a come-to-Jesus moment and say, in order to be a Republican, a Black Republican, you got to denounce your experiences as an African-American. That's what he said. Some people have just contributed to it. I think of someone like Condoleezza Rice. She's complicated because she has the skills. You know, she has the degrees. She's obviously a smart woman, but she toes the GOP line. And one has to ask, if she were a Democrat, would she have had that kind of access? She actually has a sister who is who I believe is a civil rights lawyer. And you don't hear about her in the same kind of way because Black liberals, Black Democrats, we come a dime a dozen. So it shortens the line.
Mm.
I mean, in the opening to my book, I talk about a former friend of mine who said, I'm going to come out as a conservative. And he did. And he got elevated very quickly. So I think it shortens the line. It gives you access. And no one wants to do the actual work. You know, if you sell your soul, then what are you going to get in return? And some folks, even after, look at Candace Owens. She's trying to rebrand now.
That's right.
She, you know, this is somebody who made heinous comments about Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. And this is part of the reason why I wrote the book, because part of the grift is when the grift falls apart. Mm-hmm. They want to rebrand and they want to come back. Do we accept them? Do we remember what they did? Of how they contributed. I mean, listen,
I think Coleman Hughes is going to be the new Candace Owens. I've been telling my friends, I said, like, watch out for this guy. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I said, watch out for him. He's young. He's slick. He's got all the talking points. He positions himself as being a guy. I'm not conservative, but all the conservatives love my talking points. Colorblind society. And I feel like now that Candace, like you said, is kind of out with Shapiro and Daily Wire, there's a new one. In the waiting. That's just my take.
But there, I think that the reality is that there's always going to be a new one. What gets me about Black Republicans and what makes me sick, largely is the idea that they are about complete individuality. They are not about community.
Oh, yes.
When we talk about Blackness, right? And the experience of being Black inside of this country, it is about the collective, right? Trauma. It is about collective grief. And their existence is about the denial that that has even existed and saying that if I as an individual can ascend from this place, then I can discount, right? What the collective is saying. And it is, it honestly, to me, it is so entrenched in their ego and the desire to be the one,
yeah.
Right? It is. And so if you are Black and a part of the collective, then you are one of many,
yeah.
Right? And that doesn't allow you to have the proximity, Clay, that you are talking about, that I have talked about, that many, many people talk about, which is the proximity to whiteness. Because yeah. In order to have proximity to whiteness, in order to make that ascension, you have to shed pieces of yourself. That is what makes you lighter. in more ways than one. And so my question for you is that I have a beef right now with folks like Charlemagne the God and the Breakfast Club for bringing in, right, and opening the doors to a Nikki Haley, to a Candace Owens, to Charlemagne going up on Comedy Central talking about DEI is nothing but trash. And I'm just like, whoa. Like,
guest hosting the Daily Show.
Are you ice cubing us right now? Like, is this what this is? And so what does it say to you that prominent Black men, right, are literally laying, right, rolling out the red carpet and laying the groundwork for this conservative takeover?
Listen, if you are willing to be contrarian, no matter how illogical it is, you will get a headline on Fox News, whether it's a random rapper, whether it's a person in media, because you're the one who's seeing beyond your lens. You're the independent thinker. You're the free thinker. You just see both sides. And I think what's interesting, I had a whole chapter in the book about rappers and celebrities, but it didn't really fit well, so I took it out. But they're contributing to this. And listen, I'm okay with you sitting down with Nikki Haley because she's running for president. I'm okay with that. But you gotta hold her accountable. You gotta hold Miss Confederacy accountable. This is a person who said that, I don't wanna say his name, but the disgusting, vile shooter at AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, she said he's the one that tainted the Confederate flag. I'm paraphrasing here. If you're gonna sit down with Candace Owens 4 years to the month when Breonna Taylor was killed by a police officer, you have to ask her, hold her accountable for saying, for implying that Daniel Cameron, the AG of Kentucky, that he was the victim. That's my issue with it. There's not even a remotely holding them accountable.
Nope.
So they're there and they're able to spread their contagion of misinformation. And I got to add something else too. This is so important you bring up about the individual, right? So there are, before Clarence Thomas, there are Black Republicans in the 70s and 60s. Again, policy-wise, I'm struggling with you, but they were doing actual things to try and help the Black community at large. But these are people that the GOP ignores today. Dr. T.R.M. Howard in Chicago, you know who he was? An abortion doctor. He was a Black Republican. They never speak his name. Senator Edward Brooke of Massachusetts, he was the first Black man elected in the North, right? 1967. He wrote the Fair Housing Act. He wrote it. They never mention him. They don't mention people. You want to, so, you know, bring up some folks selectively. I think of a guy, Floyd McKissick, who built an entire city called Soul City in North Carolina that eventually fell apart. They don't mention him at all. So it's this lost cause narrative where you don't even know your own history. You don't even know your own history. And they have literally pushed out anybody who cared about the community. And at this point, if you care about Black interests, you will be pushed out of the party. I give credit to Will Hurd, who was a Black Republican out of Texas, who tried to do some good work. They more or less kicked his ass out. So you can't even have morals and values for your own community and sustain in this party. But the people who uplift it, listen, Charlemagne has tons of money. Other folks have tons of money. But it isn't always about the money. It's about the proximity to power. It goes beyond the money. It's about the power.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rina Ninen, the host of the Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Over the past few years, we've looked at how women around the world are changing societal norms to increase their economic power. This season, we're focusing completely on girls. how they're pushing for a brighter, more powerful future, and what the rest of us can do to set them up for success. Join us for stories about girl power, young women who are fighting for change, to give themselves a chance to live a life of their own choosing. That's season 6 of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, speaking about the power, and it's a depressing conversation because I'm an old head, and throughout my entire career, they just get replaced, right?
Yeah.
It's like Hydra. One falls out of favor, one dies, a new one pops up. It's the same narrative that just has a few touch-ups. You replace political correctness with CRT and wokeness.
Right.
It's the DEI, right? It's colorblind society, post-racial, merit, bootstraps. But there is an insidious aspect of it that has always been divide and conquer. And I'm witnessing right now, Clay, especially with the emergence of a few other communities, marginalized communities, as they're really fighting for their lives and for their rights. I've seen how people of color, the ones who are grifting, have been used to divide other people of color in marginalized communities, specifically when it comes to LGBTQ, especially when it comes to T, right? The transgender community. And I can tell you, within my communities, they're like, the religious freedoms, the T's, got it, you know, too much. The liberals have gone too far. And they take Black Christians, Latino Catholics, South Asian Muslims, Arab Muslims. And we've been talking about on the show for years. I'm in Virginia. Danielle and I have warned about it. And voila, right in front of your face. And you're seeing them just peel off. So your recommendation to how to deal with folks like this in our community who, I'm telling you, folks, they vote Democrat, but they don't know the history. They don't know the grift. They don't know the con. They don't know the right-wing talking points like me and Danielle know and Clay know. And they're like, oh, no. Got to protect our kids.
So I mentioned this at the end of my book. I have a what's next chapter. This is Southern Strategy 2.0. That's what this is. And what the Southern Strategy is, to make it really plain, is that white politicians fell back on white racial resentment to get the white folks they lost with 1964, Lyndon B. Johnson signing that Civil Rights Act, to get them to come to the GOP. Barry Goldwater, Richard Nixon, these black folks are taking something away from you. These black folks are taking over. They're coming in your schools. They're coming in your swimming pools. We got to stop them. And so now they've replaced, black folks are still used in that way. But now what saddens me, to your point, that some of us are falling for it. So what I try and tell people, weren't you mad at poor whites for falling for it? Mm. Weren't you mad when Lyndon B. Johnson said, if you can convince the lowest white man that a colored man is picking his pockets, didn't that piss you the fuck off?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't that gaslighting bother you?
Mm-hmm.
I have folks in my fam who are very conservative, but they would never vote Republican, but they're falling a little bit for the trans thing, right? Gay folks, they're taking over. So I try to remind them, they did it to us. We were that tool. Don't fall for it. And if you fall for it, you're next. You're next. You're not immune from this. So it's all part of the hustle and the game. And it scares me. It truly scares me. And I tell people, you know, Black LGBT folks, we're part of this community as well. The enemy is not the 0.0%, 0.05% of trans people. The enemy is the rich white guy at the top who's exploiting you.
Come on.
The enemy is sometimes the rich black boss or the rich brown boss at the top who's exploiting you. Don't fall for the look over there. Don't fall for that. And I even sometimes tell Democrats, why do you fall for the GOP talking points? Why are you always on defense?
Mm-hmm.
Be a little bit more clever. Come with a fact. Mm-hmm. Don't always come on the defense. So it's a dangerous part of how that grift works because they want to bait people. You got to be careful with these kind of analogies, but I think of the way that people downplayed Hitler's influence. Oh, he won't be that bad.
Yep.
Oh, and this is documented. You can go back to the papers of the 1930s and read this kind of thing. Oh, he won't be that bad. But these Jewish people, oh my gosh, they're taking over.
Mm-hmm.
They're all taking over. So it's a sad part, and I hate to see us fall for it. And, you know, one of the things I kind of laugh at is I hear people say, well, I'm going to show Biden by not voting for him. And listen, there are plenty of things Biden has done that I don't like. You know, I was a Julian Castro guy. What do I know? You know what I'm saying? Plenty of things. But I say, you know, if Biden loses, he's going to be all right. He's set for life. You ain't going to show his kids are set for life. His grandkids are set for life. Why can't we just think about maintaining the executive branch? And if you fall for the trans gaslighting or the woke gaslighting or the DEI gaslighting, then we're already losing. You know, one thing we as Democrats sometimes do, we don't know how to celebrate our wins. Republicans will turn a loss into a win. We'll turn a win into a loss. So yeah, it's scary. It's unfortunate. And it saddens me that we sometimes fall for that. And I hope that when election time comes, we will be clever enough to know that nothing to do with us. Most of y'all have to be a metatrans person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Clay, I will say your book is the light that folks need. It is the guiding force that folks need to not fall for the rope-a-dope. And folks, the book is out now. It is entitled The Grift, The Downward Spiral of Black Republicans from the Party of Lincoln to the Cult of Trump. Pick it up now. Clay, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for making the time to join Democracy-ish. New York Times bestseller.
Can I say something really quick? Is it okay?
Please, go ahead.
I want to thank y'all for the work that you do. You know, for folks who may not know, when you're in this political space, you get a lot of hate, a lot of heat, and it's not always easy. So I want to thank y'all for doing this work. It's so important right now, whether it's in an election cycle or it's not in an election cycle. So I really, really from my heart want to thank y'all, and I really appreciate being on.
Absolutely. Feeling is mutual. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Democracy-ish. I'm Danielle Moody.
I'm Mujahid Ali, back from 1864.
And we will be back next week if, in fact, we have a country left. Inshallah.